Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. And I'm Deanna Potter, your petite powerhouse and your host of Sassy Sales and Business Development. And our topic today is Say It Well and Watch Your Profits Swell, discovering words that work in the workplace. And I am thrilled to have with me today our leading lady, Michelle Richardson, CEO and founder of Insightful Communications. Michelle, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So, you know what? I'm a big one on words because I talk all the time. So I use a lot of them. And I have to tell you, I also majored in communication. So I believe that communication makes the world go round. And I know that with your company, you know, you are the expert in this area. And there are so many companies today that I think kind of lack in their vision or the ability to communicate that. And that's what your company kind of is the expert about. And, you know, when I first invited you to come on the show and I started doing a little bit more of digging in your background, I have to tell you, you intrigued me. And the first part that just made me laugh so hard is the fact that you were coding games at the age of 6 on your home computer and that you're a daughter of a career Air Force veteran. And your background's in HR. Tell me if any of this is incorrect, if I'm making any of this up. And
you're doing
really
well.
Have this, I'm doing well. And that, you know, your HR background being what it is, you have a lot of this laced with high-tech exposure. You know, you've got quite an impressive resume. You've worked with companies like Boeing and Toyota, Yahoo, Career Builder, and I could go on and on and on. You had a lot of experience, see what companies do well and what they do not do well. And yet we have all heard statistics that only 3 out of every 10 employees feel engaged in the workplace. Why do you think this is? What are employers missing when it comes to connecting, communicating, and really, you know, engaging their employees? What is it that they aren't doing well?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And, you know, Gallup came out with that number that about 3 out of 10 employees are engaged. And I've been working with Gallup and looking at their surveys for well over a decade now. They have a Q12 engagement survey. And the one thing I will say is that it just depends. Every company is different. And let me start by just kind of defining what I view engagement as. I see engagement as arriving to work with a sense of purpose and then finishing the day with a sense of achievement in some way. When you can get that, then you can feel engaged and productive in the workplace. But before we talk about what employers are missing, I just want to remind everyone that engagement is a choice. So employees also have a certain responsibility in their own engagement. Without them taking responsibility for that, whatever their employers do, whether it's, you know, adding foosball tables, adding extra benefits, or whatever that might be, that'll have little effect unless employees also take responsibility for their part in their engagement.
Thank you so much for saying that. Thank you so much for saying that, really. Because, yeah. You know, I do some corporate training and some other things in coaching, as you know. And I think to some degree, you know, each individual is responsible for their own choices. And, you know, I was just reading a book this morning on John Maxwell, and he talks about starting every day with the right attitude. And, you know, I think it becomes more and more difficult, especially the larger the company gets, for that employer, quote unquote, we talk about how leadership starts from the top down to create that culture. And I applaud you. Thank you so much for saying that for the employers out there who really are trying, and yet there are so many outside forces that affect an individual in their lives. It can't just be about the employer. So thank you. I just think that's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. It's critical. I've seen it in many organizations that have tried so hard to engage employees, but if people aren't doing it, doing their part, the efforts fail. But what something that employers can do that I have noticed is that the first thing employers must do is listen and find ways to connect people's personal passion and purpose with the organizational passion and purpose. And I think the mistake that some organizations make is they think that the organizational passion and purpose has to be aligned or exactly like a personal passion or purpose. But really, that's not true. And I'll give you a quick example. I did some work with a restaurant chain. They have 200 locations nationwide. And we did some roundtable events and to find out what engaged them or what they brought to the workplace in terms of passion and purpose. And it wasn't necessarily about the company's organizational goals, but it was about, I remember hearing very poignantly from one of the people, that one of the general managers, he says, I work this hard in this company, even though things are changing so much and it's hard, because I care about my family. And everything that I do here, I'm a role model for my children. I came into this company as a line cook, and now I'm a general manager. And so I'm a role model, and so that's my passion and purpose for being here and doing well in the company. So when companies can connect to that and leverage that in people, that's when they start to build engagement.
Great. So tell me, one of your core services that you offer, and there's three of them I believe I saw, is employer branding, how to attract and keep the best talented people. Tell us, what does that take in today's business world?
Yeah, I'll step back just a little bit to talk a little bit about what employer branding is or what it was or where we came from. Back in the, I would say, mid to late 90s, employer branding was really about creating an EVP, an employer value proposition, much like the USP that you see companies making for consumer marketing and brand marketing. And then employer branding was about building internal brand guidelines and consistency and messaging so that we could market and recruit to the outside world. But social media and technology has changed that completely. So now, today, employer branding is defined by what employees say about the company, and there's a heavier reliance on employee engagement and advocacy over employer advertising. So the way that employers bolster their brand is to basically walk the talk. I don't know if you remember the New York Times article about Amazon, and some of the employees had written that or were interviewed and said that Amazon was a bruising workplace. This was in the New York Times a couple months ago. And then most recently, there was some news around Twitter where their EVP of engineering caused a firestorm on social media with the slip of a tongue around diversity and inclusion. So these are all things that infect the employer brand. So they might say, we're this, but if the employees say something differently in a very public forum like social media, it impacts the employer brand.
Sure. You know, and the interesting part to me about that is it can take, you know, we all hear, it's kind of like a trust factor. It takes a long time to build trust and takes very little to break it. And you could have one or two people say a contradicting characteristic or feature about a company's brand, and it could just be one or two opinions, thousands of other employees that disagree, but it could be just that one comment that really hurts the brand for a very long length of time. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, one of the things I see companies doing to kind of overcome that, I think, was that where your question might have been going?
Yes, exactly. What do you do in that case?
People are very quick to come to social media to complain and share negative news, even if it's just that one or two people in the organization amongst the thousands of others who are very satisfied. Mm-hmm. I think companies are getting better about this now, but they need to release the reins a little bit on social media and allow their employees to tweet, to do Facebook updates, LinkedIn updates, so they can talk about the good that's happening in the organization. But so many companies are kind of locked down in terms of what they're allowing their employees to talk about socially online. But we need to give them a forum to share, the same forum that people are sharing, the one or two oddballs that are sharing the negative information. We need to give those positive employees a forum to share that same message or a different message.
You know, you make me think of something. A group of my friends and I were sitting around talking about Yelp. I think Yelp is kind of a good analogy in this case. You go and you take a look at 4,500 reviews on Yelp, and, you know, you read through, and if an establishment's got a really good 4.5, 5-star rating, you're always going to have one or two that pop up. And you read it, and we were saying how you think about the source, and you're listening to the comments, and you're going, well, these people are either unrealistic, or you sound a little loony, or, okay, you take it with a grain of salt, because everything else was so positive from so many others. But it's a very open forum. You know, they've kind of let the public have their say. So I understand what you're saying. You know, if a company felt really comfortable, secure, and positive about their brand and their culture, then they would feel safe enough to be able to say to their employees, you know what, we want to hear from you, and we mean that wholeheartedly. So, but that's also a really, really risky place to go, and you got to feel really confident about your communication, your culture, your vision, and how you're executing, I would say. So, yeah, it's,
absolutely.
You know, the brave place, very creative. Yeah, yeah. So tell me, now that we're very clear about what employer branding is, how do you attract and keep the best, most talented people in today's culture or in today's business world?
I think the best way to do that is to don't overcomplicate things. I think one of the things that employers try to do is they try to offer too many benefits, and they try to have too many kind of figure out what the word I want to use for this, but too many points of benefit to become an employee or to be an employee with an organization. I see this a lot with smaller branded companies that are trying to compete with the larger branded companies. They can't compete in terms of benefits and all these other things that they offer, so maybe they can offer the benefit of a different work culture. So maybe in a smaller organization, your employment brand is centered around the autonomy that you're able to create for your employees versus, you know, the Qualcomms of the world that are, you know, that offer a stipend for cell phones and other technological devices to their employees and really great benefits. If you're a smaller company, you can't offer that. What else can you offer? So really focusing on what your brand proposition is as an employer and leveraging that. But also making sure, like I said earlier, that you're doing the right thing consistently and creating internal advocates who can support what your company stands for.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So let's say we've attracted the people and we're growing and we've got some leadership transitions happening, or maybe we're having problems keeping the talent. Talk to me about leadership transitions, because you guys, that's another core service that you offer. Explain first off what type of different leadership transitions you might be seeing with some of the people that you work with, and what kind of pain pressure points that can cause if it's not done well, and how you help people kind of do it, execute it effectively.
Yeah. People are being promoted. They're also moving out to other companies, so they're making lateral moves over to different companies. And it's creating these leadership transitions in organizations where you might have a new CEO who then brings in a new COO or other executives to kind of fill up his team. And then all of a sudden you have, you know, all new leadership. Or it might just be someone who internally is promoting from manager level up to a director or VP level in the organization. Either way, those transitions kind of rock the boat just a little bit in the organization as roles change. And the challenge for the leader is in their first several days, 3 months to 6 months in their position, they're under really intense scrutiny. And they feel the pressure to create some immediate wins and rush to action. And that creates some pitfalls for those leaders, especially when it comes to communications, because they might make a misstep and might say something before they were ready to say it or it needed to be said. So some of the things that I work with our clients on is I help them kind of reel things back just a little bit so they can spend time to think introspectively about their leadership style and how it's going to fit into the culture of the organization and their new role. I also encourage that they take some time to think about and find out what makes the company tick. And the biggest thing I ask them to do is to talk to their people and engage in conversations to kind of get them involved and enrolled in what they're doing. It's so important to kind of get a lay of the land before they start making big decisions from their role.
Mm-hmm. So now, do you find sometimes, you know, it depends on a person's almost like leadership style or personality style even, whether or not they kind of operate that way?
Absolutely, because some people, you know, I've worked with some managers that jump in and they just want to execute. And I've seen where that can work, because if that's the kind of culture they've dived into, then it's perfect. But in a lot of cases, people are a little bit weary when a new leader comes in. There's a lot of uncertainty that's involved, especially if it's a C-suite leader. People worry about their job stability. They worry about whether or not they're still going to be a fit in the organization. So people are really watching. And what's interesting, they're watching before you even say a word. They're looking at what you're doing, and they're looking at your actions. So you're communicating before you even think you are. So leaders just really, even before they get into the door on their first day, they need to be doing some of this work to prepare for that first day, just showing up and what their unspoken communication might be saying to people when they come in.
Well, that is a great transition to something that I'm really interested in having you define for me. You talk a bit about strategic messaging. Tell us a little bit about what that is and why it's so important.
So remember when your parents told you when you were younger, think before you speak? So basically, strategic messaging is asking you to think a little bit longer before you speak. So all I'm asking is that people think about considering what they say connects to the bigger picture. It's not just about the immediate message that you want to convey. So for example, let's say you've decided to implement a new CRM sales management system in your company, and it's all new, and you have 200 salespeople that need to adopt and embrace this new CRM. You could communicate a message and say, we have a new CRM starting on December 1st, here's your new login codes, and it's very simple and direct. You've conveyed the message. But if you don't think strategically about that and how people will be impacted, what workflows might change, how things might slow down or speed up depending on, you know, the system, then you haven't thought strategically about it. So you need to create messages to ease people into the change, so they're not just receiving it, even though you've given them a month's notice.
Oh, gosh. I lived through a real-life experience of that in the 90s. I worked at a call center, 450 people. Every time they wanted to just easily roll something out, and I was in the training department, it was like, and you couldn't pull staff off the phones. We were handling, you know, 14 Western states. The lines were open 24 hours a day. We had queues we were trying to manage. It was like, wait. How do you plan on pulling these people off? How are we going to execute the training? How are we going to, you know, it was like, I always loved it when somebody would say, hey, we're going to, it's a great system, really wonderful, we'll make so much efficiencies and improvements. Everybody's throwing the brakes on going, and how do you expect us to do this?
I think that's the problem with a lot of leaders is that they, you know, they create messages in a vacuum. They're in a bubble. And so unless you get out there and sit on the phones or use the CRM system or whatever system might be changing, you don't know how what you're saying is going to affect other people.
I there was a great leader that I worked for in corporate many years ago, and when he started a project, he brought in a representative from every level of the company, from the customer service rep on the front line through the underwriter all the way up. It was you know, he was great at it because he knew he couldn't see all the pieces and the parts, so he brought the people in to make sure he had a full great example. So tell me, you talk about your strategic communication approach focusing on, as you put it, creating desired outcomes, not solving problems. And when I saw that, it really made me stop. And I thought, very interesting. Creating desired outcomes, not solving problems. Can you explain to our listeners what the difference is and what the advantage is to that approach? Because, you know, most people say, you're not solving problems, but I have problems. I need them solved. But you know what? I like the whole desired outcome part.
It's really just a frame of mind. So let me give you an example. So if you focus on fixing problems, it's like plugging your fingers into the holes of a bucket to prevent water from coming out, right? At some point, you're going to run out of fingers. You have to use toes, and you run out of toes, and then, you know, your bucket's still spilling water. So when you focus on the outcome that you want, so in this example, it might be, I need to move this water from one place to another. It forces you to think about alternative and creative solutions or outcomes that are more enduring. It's not just a temporary, I'm going to fix it, plug it, and solve the problem. I want to create the outcome that I want. So I really, when I work with clients, they might say, I have a problem with my employees not being productive. They're not doing what they need to do. I need to fix it. Okay. What is it? What is the specific outcome that you want to get from that? What are we looking to truly achieve versus what is the problem we're trying to fix? And I finally focus on that. We're able to get better solutions.
Oh, I love it. I love that. And what a great analogy. Because I think that for so many of us listening in, if we're dealing with something right now, we get so fixated on this is broken, this is broken, this is broken, instead of, well, wait a second, let's step back. What are we trying to achieve? Forget this being broken. Let's just find another solution. Oh,
exactly.
Love it. Yeah. And sometimes we can become so obsessed and almost stubborn and, you know, damn it, I'm just going to fix this just because now I'm pissed off enough that this needs to be done. Forget it. Let it go. Just there's only 15 other ways to solve this problem. So wonderful.
Right.
I love that. Love that. Once you've assisted a client in getting their message out strategically, I know you do more, much more beyond that. What are some other ways beyond that that you work with clients, next steps along the way?
Well, we start by creating those key messages and the supporting messages, as, you know, that strategic messaging piece is our first step. After that, it starts to get into kind of brass tacks and tactical planning and execution of those messages through typical communications channels that you see in a company, like email, presentation and talking points, voicemail, intranet. Basically, what we're trying to do is send that key message in multiple ways to different people so it hits the right people at the right time. But one of the things that I've noticed or that I know about companies is that communication is a habit, and so it's something that needs to be, or a skill that needs to be developed over time. And it's really easy, especially for executives and leaders, to kind of get off message because they allow emotion or logic to get in the way as business starts to go along. So part of the work that we do after that strategic messaging piece is working with clients in the capacity of coaching, consulting, or training so they can continually connect the people to the purpose, and giving them that feedback loop so that they can be accountable for the things that they said they wanted, and that so we can start tracking measurable results from their communication.
And how do you do that? How do you track the results?
A number of different ways. So we do it through qualitative measurement. So it might be through employee engagement surveys. So we'll take one at the beginning, and then maybe we'll take one at the end of the year or 6 months, 9 months later. We might also do it by measuring kind of the quantitative things, like how many people clicked on this article or this story on the internet, and what was their reaction to it, because I typically try to have a call to action, even in internal communications. So it really just depends on what we're communicating, but those are just a couple examples of how we might measure.
Okay. And is there a certain magical frequency, certain number of touches, how often it is good for leadership management to be communicating with general staff? Is it once a week, once a day? You know, how often?
That depends on the culture of the organization. I do feel that most executives feel like they need to over-communicate, and the research that I found says that actually in most organizations, employees are overwhelmed with information and activity at work, and a very small percentage of them have the systems to deal with all the information that they're receiving. So one of the things I work with companies on after that strategic messaging is really finding out very specifically what is the simplest way to get the message out without overwhelming your people. A lot of people get a lot of emails is what I've heard. And they get a lot of emails from different leaders, and they sometimes have conflicting messages. So part of my work is really helping companies to organize all those messages and create systems and processes so they don't overwhelm their people.
Okay. So do you find that most companies, one of the better ways to do it is to have an intranet system where the employees check in?
I think that works for some, although you have to create that engagement and, you know, get people over to the intranet. I think for some, a weekly or a biweekly email work. In some organizations, I've seen CEOs do CEO blogs, you know, and they create very engaging blogs. They might not always write their blogs. They might have a ghostwriter help actually develop the content for that. But having those blogs is actually useful because it engages people and touches people. And then the simplest communication tool doesn't even have to be electronic. It can just be the CEO walking around the office for a moment, talking to the people.
Can you tell me, what's the average length of a representation or a relationship with your clients that you work with them? Is it on an annual contract most often, or does it vary? How does that work for you?
Usually it's at least 3 months, depending on the program, but it can go as long as a year or more. Okay. So employer branding can take a little bit longer, and depending on the size of the company, helping them with their internal communications, whether or not they have a team of their own, or mm-hmm. you know, they're using our company as their kind of external internal communications team.
Because you write, you'll go as far as writing every piece of content for them if they do not have in-house staff that has that skill level, correct?
Yes, we have a team of writers that can help them with actually developing the content. My goal, however, is to help companies become self-sufficient. So while I would love to have them as clients for life, my goal really is to help them create those internal processes so they can do it on their own. And one of the things that I do help them with is their internal communications team development, so helping them develop their own internal communication staff if they're growing it kind of organically, or if they already have one that's established that they just need some support.
Gotcha. And are there particular trends that you're seeing right now at this time, you know, in the temperature of what's going on in business?
Well, one of the things that I keep seeing popping up, especially with regard to employee engagement, is this conversation about millennials. They are getting
Amen.
A lot of attention.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, I agree. I'm hearing the same thing. Yeah.
And, you know, it makes sense. They're outnumbering baby boomers and Gen Xers. But here's the thing. I'm looking forward to, and I'm seeing it happen ever so slightly, but I'm looking forward to the conversation shifting, not towards creating a workplace for millennials to grow, but just to creating a more human workplace, because ultimately that's what we want. We want to be treated as humans. We crave connections. And if employers and leaders can focus on that versus our age differences, our ethnicities, and our you know, gender differences, I think that engagement will soar.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent. So, Michelle, tell me, I know that there's going to be people that are listening in that may have more questions for you or are interested in learning more about what your company does beyond what we've talked about. What's the best way for any of the listeners to get in touch with you or follow up with you after the radio show today?
Well, they can always give me a call. My number is 858-397-5616. And, of course, they can visit us online. The website address is insightfulcommunications.com, and it's spelled INCITEFUL, communications.com.
Wonderful. And I'm going to give that phone number out one more time for everyone. That was 858-397-5616. Michelle Richardson, thank you so much. You are a wealth of knowledge and absolutely a joy, and I appreciate so much you being on the call today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I also want to thank everyone for listening in today to our Monday morning show. Special thanks to all of our listeners. And as you know, we'll be back again next Monday morning for another Women Lead radio show. We're here every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Our leading lady next week will be Lynn Halsinger, owner of Art Trails San Diego, and the topic will be Awakening Art in the Community. I'm Deanna Potter, your petite powerhouse and the host of your Sassy Sales and Business Development radio show. I want to thank you for listening, and I hope you have another great week. Everyone, go forth, be prosperous, and bring in those profits. Thank you, everybody.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.